Blog Talk Radio.
The Senate will come to order.
Are you ready?
Yeah!
I want to know, is everybody ready?
Yeah!
All right, here we go. Everybody, get on up and do your stuff. Did you hear what I say? I said everybody, get on up and do your stuff. You better get up.
Hey everybody, happy Friday. Welcome to Congress College. My name is Elizabeth Chris. You know what, I need to thank you in advance for spending 30 minutes of your Friday evening with me to learn all about Congress, because that's what Congress College is all about. Congress College airs twice weekly on the Monday show, same time slot as you're listening to right now, 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. On Monday, we usually outline the week, and what that means is we are going to talk about literally what will be coming up in the Senate of the United States. How about the House of Representatives? We mention the bills coming up on the floor of the House, too. Sometimes we might talk about a hearing, especially if it's one of national interest. And then on the Friday show, which of course is the show you're listening to right now, when Congress is in session, we recap the week and we discuss exactly what got done. And, you know, I do the show in part so you can answer this really, really simple question. Were you represented well in Washington, D.C. for the week? Because think about it. Those guys and gals in the Senate, those guys and gals in the House, they represent you. They represent me. We have the greatest representative government in the world. Yes, we've got warts. Yes, we've got problems. But we do. Our model is the best there is. So it only works really, really well, though, folks, if we know what our representatives are doing. So we have to know what's going on in the Senate. We have to know what's going on in the House of Representatives. And I am happy to bring that to you twice weekly via Congress College. I also do the show to familiarize folks with the free website, gradegov.com. And, of course, gradegov.com is all about grading members of Congress. You want to grade your member of Congress? Maybe you want to grade somebody you just heard about or read about. And, of course, when I'm talking about the grades, I'm talking about the grades you got in school, the A, B, C, D, or F. I know I got a few Fs along the way. The site is free and always will be free, and I pledge that. And basically, you go on the site, you figure out who you want to grade, then you figure out what grade you want to give them, and then the site will prompt you to write a letter explaining the grade. And actually, the site auto-prompts, it auto-fills in the first part of the letter, does the salutation, the date, your email contact, dear Senator, let's use Rubio, dear Senator Rubio, I gave you an A today, and you have to say why. Check your spelling. And then once you click send, you've just graded a member of Congress and you've written them a letter. And folks, they do look at gradegov.com. I can't stress that enough. Members of Congress do go on gradegov.com to see what you think of them. And your letter stays up on gradegov. So tell your friends, tell your family, hey, tell your foes about gradegov.com. I really appreciate it. All right, let's get started. I'm doing this sort of halfway remotely, so I can't launch the chat room. So guys in the chat room, welcome, have fun, enjoy, and let's get started. Well, here you go. The Senate and the House have been out. They've been out since the middle part of the week, or the actually early part of the week, so they could enjoy the Veterans Day festivities with their constituents back home. So I thought we'd talk a little bit about Obamacare, because I know that those folks that are re-signing up for their insurance kind of know that we're in that season now. And I bet people already know this. Obamacare is crumbling under its own weight. And obviously, whatever problems Obamacare is facing, the law's not going to go away. It's going to crumble, but there's still so many things that stay in place. So the next time a new president takes office, Obamacare is still going to be covering millions of Americans. And it got regulations on individuals and businesses that I know Common Knowledge listeners know are huge. So here's what's happening now. It's open season. If you want to change your insurance, you can re-up now. If they want to change something on you, they can re-up now. They can change your coverage, change what doctors are covered. And here's the deal. Insurance companies have now had a chance to assess all the medical claims that are coming up from those coming into Obamacare. They've had 3 years, the training wheels, if you will. And it's become pretty clear that the pool of enrollees is a lot more expensive than they expected. In other words, insurance companies aren't signing up enough young people or healthy people. Why do they need them? And they obviously need them to offset the coverage of older and sicker employees. Because the older and sicker enrollees were the first ones to sign up. And they therefore, obviously, put a huge hit on the companies. So what do the companies do? They've had to hike their premiums, limit choices, like your doctor or your hospital. And it's going to get worse after 2016. Because the federal government had a few forms of easing the pain, if you will. They had a few forms of Obama implementation that helped these first 3 years be a little easier on insurance companies. But here's the deal. Without the federal money, without better enrollment, of course, that means younger and healthier, companies are going to have to decide whether they're going to stay for Obamacare. And if so, how do they make that work? Is it more rate hikes? More exits by insurers? Of course, you know what that means. The less companies that are insuring, the smaller your choices, the smaller your doctor's choices, the smaller your hospital choices. And obviously higher premiums. So here comes the Republicans in Congress. They've got to do something about it. And they've got to do something about it probably, if not the end of this year, next year. At least they've got to try. What are they going to do? They're going to try to make changes under what is called the reconciliation process. Reconciliation is significant. We've talked about it often on Congress College. But it's significant because Obamacare was originally passed by reconciliation. Where does reconciliation come from? It is born out of a budget resolution. And I know Congress College listeners know this. When Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid first ran the joint in 2008 and 9 and 10 and 11, they did not do budget resolutions. Didn't do them at all. So there was no opportunity for reconciliation. But now the Senate Majority Leader, Mitch McConnell, and the Republicans in the House, they passed a budget resolution, and in it was reconciliation instructions. And again, it's significant because Obamacare was passed by reconciliation. Part of it can be repealed by reconciliation. And why is reconciliation so magic? Because the Senate of the United States, it can't be filibustered. There's a time limit on it. There's an actual clock that says you start the debate and you end the debate after a certain number of hours. It's 20 hours. And because it can't be filibustered, it only takes 51 to pass it. What's going to be in the reconciliation bill that will try to defund or alter or repeal Obamacare? Well, we know they're going to try to do something with the Cadillac tax. They're going to try to do something with the mandates. Both the mandates on the American people and the mandates on businesses. And, of course, the mandates on the American people are that you have to buy insurance. If you breathe, you have to buy insurance. The medical device tax, that was and is huge. It's part of what funds Obamacare. All these things are going to be tricky to try to keep them in reconciliation. I'm not going to get into the minutia now, but there are rules. They're called Byrd rules. They're called extraneous, and things can be stripped out of a reconciliation bill by the Senate parliamentarian if she happens to believe that they do not fit in the reconciliation requirements. Well, we're going to talk more about that at a later date once we see the actual reconciliation bill and its text. The Senate parliamentarian has already been looking at the House-passed bill, and some of it, she says, won't pass muster. But here's one thing that she did say would pass muster, and this is different than Obamacare. The House of Representatives included in their reconciliation bill a provision that would strip out all funding for Planned Parenthood. Before we started and we pivot to Planned Parenthood, did you know what Colorado voters are going to get the opportunity to do next year? They're going to be the first state to decide whether they should pay for single-payer, all-comprehensive, state-funded health care for every single resident in Colorado. They need almost 100,000 valid signatures. They pretty much got that, so it looks like it'll end up on the ballot. Colorado would pay the bill. Colorado Care would be paid by the residents. They're looking at raising $25 billion a year for health care costs. And how are they doing it? A 10% payroll tax. Wowie, wowie, wowie. Okay, Colorado, first state to go single payer. That was the fear with Obamacare, is it was the toe in the water to try to eventually get to single payer, which is the federal government buys health insurance for everybody and somehow pays for it. Well, Colorado's going to give it a shot, $25 billion a year, and they're going to do it by proposing a 10% payroll tax. All right. We'll see how that goes. That's likely going to be on the Colorado ballot next year. But here we go with Planned Parenthood. It's in the reconciliation bill to have the money cut. Speaker Ryan's going to have to try to figure out how to thread that needle when it comes to Congress and funding. It's $500 million. They've already created on the House side a special committee to deal with it. It is a special committee that the subcommittee would fall under Energy and Commerce, and the speaker announced that Marsha Blackburn, the Republican from Tennessee, would serve as its panel's chairman. This is what she said. What people want us to do is get to the bottom of what has transpired with Planned Parenthood and the utilization of taxpayer funds. There is a frustration from our constituents. The more we know, the more questions we have. That's from Congresswoman Blackburn, the Republican from Tennessee. Take a listen to Nancy Pelosi's reaction to that and what she's going to do with her panel. See if you don't see a little snideness in this. Here you go.
On another front, yesterday I pointed the members to our select committee. We renamed it subcommittee, Republican Select Committee to Attack Women's Health. Our ranking member, Jan Schakowsky of Illinois, and Congresswoman Diana DeGette are of the steering of the Energy and Commerce Committee. From Judiciary, Jerry Nadler and Susan DelBene, and from Gov Reform, Bonnie Watson-Coleman and Jackie Speier of California. Those are the three committees of jurisdiction for this issue where hearings take place. They bring a great wealth of knowledge, staff, intellectual resources and the rest to this. It's a funny thing. We'll see what their agenda is as they go forward. But I do believe that hardworking families deserve better than wasting taxpayers' money on select committees that diminish women's health possibilities.
Wow, diminish women's health possibilities. Obviously, she's not for this. She thinks it's a hoax. She thinks it's a witch hunt. Well, there's more that's coming out about Planned Parenthood other than the fact that they were selling aborted baby parts. There's more that's coming out. I want you to take a listen here. This is about 4 minutes. I won't play all of it. But this is allegations that Planned Parenthood paid $3 for birth control and then billed Medicaid for $35. And there's more. Just take a listen here for a few minutes.
Planned Parenthood buys birth control pills for $2.98 a cycle. Then they bill the taxpayers $35.
you worked at Planned Parenthood for 17 years in Iowa and even managed two locations for a large portion of that time. You're also in the middle of a lawsuit that alleges Planned Parenthood is fraudulently billing taxpayers via Medicaid for a lot of their services, like birth control. Can you explain that?
Title 19 women, Medicaid women, would come in. They're low income. They qualify for Medicaid. We're advertising that everything is free. They would come in with their Medicaid card, and we would solicit a donation from them. If they had an exam and screening for infections and maybe some medication and birth control, it might be $300 or $400, and we would say a suggested donation is 50%. So we would be asking them for one or two or three, I mean, however many dollars to help pay for that, yet we would still bill Medicaid that full amount. We didn't discount what the client had paid. Regarding birth control pills, Planned Parenthood buys birth control pills for $2.98 a cycle. Then they bill the taxpayers $35, and they're reimbursed around $26, a little bit over $26. And then every client is requested or required to pay a $10 donation. So I'm a foster parent. I've had a lot of kids, and I've taken them to different appointments, and never once have I been asked to give a donation towards their dentist appointment, or Medicaid has always covered it. And I remember saying to my boss numerous times, is this right that we're soliciting donations from Medicaid-eligible women? And he said, yes, it's fine. It's, you know, it's all legal, and we should have been doing it years ago.
So now, because you're in the middle of this lawsuit, I'm
okay, I'm going to, it's a bit long, but it's more. This is when they worked for Planned Parenthood for 17 years. Just this not disgruntled employee. She fed up the abuse, the abuse and the abuse of this. So Pelosi not wanting to take this on, I bet you that they'll get to the bottom of it, or at least have some hearings. And I agree with the woman. Have you ever been in an office where an office asked for donations for your services? Anyway. Well, how about Gitmo? You want to talk a little bit about Gitmo, because that is going to be front and center before you know it. Remember, President Obama signed the defense authorization bill last year. It was around Christmas time, and he didn't like the Gitmo language. There was language in there that said that Gitmo couldn't be closed by him, and he said that he thought it violated his constitutional rights. Well, Monday before the Senate went out, they passed the Veterans Affairs Military Construction Appropriations Bill. They passed it 93-0. That sent it to the president. The bill deals with military construction, military family housing, base closures, provides appropriations for the Veterans Affairs, Veterans Benefits, health programs, National Cemetery. All of that. Well, within that bill includes language that basically says the president cannot close Gitmo. Take a listen to this. This is senators talking about the closing.
It is not even so much as the number of orders that the president has issued regarding executive orders. It's the executive orders that are directly against the legislative intent of the House and the Senate. And this administration has continually gone around the Congress and tried to figure out which button to push to irritate Congress the most. Well, he sure as hell has pushed my button. As I have said for years and years, we are not going to have terrorists from Gitmo come to Fort Leavenworth, the intellectual center of the Army, or any other location in the United States. That will not work. We will not let that happen. It's egregious. It's an overstep and an abrogation of the executive's power. Why do we even have a Congress? If the president can issue an executive order on anything, and in this particular case, endanger our national security, then what are we even doing here?
The president in this latest announcement is overcooking my grits. I will tell you that there's no question in my mind that there's only one location on earth, where these enemy combatants should be, and that is Gitmo.
The law states no money shall be made available, shall be used, can be designated for the assistance of the transfer of Guantanamo Bay detainees. Several weeks ago, I was asked on a Thursday by by an Associated Press reporter.
Okay, well, you're getting the message. The first senator was Senator Pat Roberts, the Republican from Kansas. Why was he so upset? Because it looks like Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, might be one of the places they would move the Gitmo detainees. The second senator you heard was Senator Scott of South Carolina. There is a military brig in South Carolina that they're looking at. It's in Florence. Won't this be a little bit of an issue for Hillary Clinton, don't you think? I mean, I'm thinking that it will. Here's why. Super Tuesday, that big primary in March where there's multiple states having a primary, early primary, one of them is South Carolina. Won't that be an issue for her? Isn't she going to have to make a statement one way or the other as to what she thinks about this? But here's what the president's spokesman, Josh Ernst, said on Monday. I certainly wouldn't take off the table the ability of the president to use whatever authority is available to him to try to move closer to accomplishing this goal. And that goal is closing Gitmo. I don't say that with any specific action in mind. I just say it to illustrate to you the determination that the president feels to try to get this done. Well, here's the deal, folks. The president's already hearing from Republicans, but he's also hearing from some on his side of the aisle. There's a coalition of human rights and civil liberties that say they are going to join voices on the right, saying they need to hold terrorism suspects at Gitmo. I don't know how this is going to play out. I don't know how the senators from Kansas, from South Carolina, from Colorado, that's another place that they're thinking about putting them, and the members of the House. But, you know, Colorado is also one of those states that Hillary Clinton will need for her election. Not everything has to point to political reelection, but this certainly, I think, will. Let's have a little fun here for just a minute. Well, let me play this one more clip on Gitmo, and you can get the tone. And then we're going to have a little fun. Here you go.
The Congress has spoken, both when Democrats were in charge and also now with Republican leadership, that this is not something that the American people want to see happen with Guantanamo. And so the president needs to follow the law, and the law is very clear on this.
I do not believe so. I think there's a clear language in the Defense Authorization Bill for years now that, but he may try it by executive order, just like a federal judge has just stayed his orders on immigration. He doesn't respect the Constitution anymore.
That was Senator Kelly Ayotte of New Hampshire and Senator John McCain of Arizona after they heard what the president's press secretary said about the closing of Gitmo. In other words, it's been in two different bills recently. The last defense authorization bill from 2014 was passed in December of 2014. That covered most of 2015. And now this Veterans Affairs Military Construction Appropriations Bill. Will the president veto that bill? Because the language is in there. Remember, it passed the Senate 93-0. Will the president veto it because it's in there? We're going to talk about that, I'm sure, on the coming weeks, but that's something to obviously pay attention to. And I promise the Congress College listeners, that's exactly what we will do. We want a little fun for a minute. This is going on to the election news cycle, but take a listen to this. This is an ad, a Hillary Clinton ad, well, sort of. Take a listen.
I had this terrible sense of anxiety, this unshakable sense of doom, but that was before I tried forgetting.
If you're a supporter of Hillary Clinton and you have a nagging fear that her shameful past will come back to ruin her election chances, this message of hope is for you. DNC Pharmaceuticals presents Try Forgetting, more than just a drug, a way of coping.
Hillary was in charge of destroying the reputations of the women Bill sexually harassed. That used to bother me. Then I tried Try Forgetting. Now I don't even remember what a bimbo eruption is.
When I tried Try Forgetting, I completely forgot about the missing files from Vince Foster's office, ChinaGate, the Madison Guarantee swindle, money for pardons. It's all just gone.
Thanks to Try Forgetting, I believe there really is a vast right-wing conspiracy that makes Bill jump into the sack with all those girls.
Here's the best part. I even forgot that Hillary stood by her husband even when she learned that he'd raped Juanita Broderick. Thank you, Try Forgetting. Thank you, DNC Pharmaceuticals. I definitely recommend Try Forgetting to all my fellow Democrats. It made the difference between... What was I saying?
Side effects are generally mild and include nausea, dizziness, and loss of self-esteem. In more severe cases, side effects include delusions of victory, irrational exuberance, and the complete suspension of rational judgment.
Try Forgetting. Whatever it takes to win.
Pretty clever. Pretty clever. And the couple there were your average American couple talking to each other about pills they'd taken. It was pretty clever. Try Forgetting. Have fun with that. All right, we're going to do a little bit of election news, and as I always do the president's daily schedule, so I'm going to give you a minute to get your paper, get your pencil ready. Let me say this about election news. It's amazing, but I'm coming to the conclusion that this is not the year of the governor. None of the top-tier Republicans in the nomination process are governors, even though there's so many sitting governors or former governors in the Republican nominee slot in the tickets, on the tickets. Think about it. Governors are better equipped than almost anybody. They've already balanced budgets. It's not because they're that big of a deal, because they have to, but they've already balanced budgets. They've led in moments of crises like hurricanes, terrorist attacks. They've forged coalitions. A lot of them deal with press. And they've commanded a National Guard, typically, which is obviously a small version of the Defense Department. But I really honestly believe this is not the year of the governor. This election will not be the year of the governors. This is a strange one, folks, and I know we're going to be talking about it for the next, obviously, almost year. All right, as I promised, paper and pencil ready. Here's the president's daily schedule. Today, 11:30, he met with Archbishop Joseph Kurtz. He's the president of the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops and two other cardinals, a Monsignor and a cardinal. At 12:30, he had lunch. He ate lunch with Vice President Biden. And later in the afternoon, he's going to meet with national security leaders to discuss the Trans-Pacific Partnership. That's in the Roosevelt Room. That's it. Had 11:30 meeting, ate lunch, and had that other meeting. That is it, folks. That is your president's hard at work schedule. All right, I'm going to leave you with a fun one. This is Fleetwood Mac. Don't stop thinking about tomorrow, because we got to think about tomorrow. Tomorrow's there. We got lots of opportunities. But you know what? Before I sign off and tell you guys have a wonderful, blessed weekend, let's say a prayer for the people in Paris, France. There's over 100 people in a concert hall. They're being held hostage. And some of the news reports are these 100-plus hostages are being shot one by one. So say a prayer for those in France. And in the meantime, have a wonderful, wonderful, blessed weekend. And I will talk to you on Monday. Thanks again. Stay tuned.